What's up, everyone? This is Anthony Pompliano. Most of you know me as Pomp. You're listening to the Pomp Podcast, simply the best podcast out there. Now let's kick this thing off.
Will Clemente is the lead analyst at Blockware. In this conversation, we talk about Bitcoin, the market structure, on-chain analytics, and why Will is starting to become optimistic. I really enjoyed this conversation with Will, and I hope you guys enjoy it as well. Before we get into this episode, though, I first want to talk about our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by FTX US. FTX.us is the safe, regulated way to buy and sell Bitcoin and other digital assets. You can trade crypto with up to 85% lower fees than top competitors. There are no fixed minimum fees, no ACH transaction fees, and no withdrawal fees either. FTX.us is also the only leading exchange that supports both Ethereum and Solana NFTs. Download the FTX app today and use referral code POMP to earn these free crypto on every trade over $10. The more you trade, the more you earn. Go download the FTX app today and use referral code POMP. Today's episode is brought to you by Unstoppable Domains. If you're a regular listener of this podcast, I'd bet that the two things are true. First, you're passionate about Web3 and protecting your personal data. And two, you're a human being. If I'm right, then congratulations. You're entitled to all the benefits of the decentralized web. But here's the catch. As Web3-enabled technology like NFTs, smart contracts, and DAOs dive more elements of our real-world lives online, proving that you're a person without surrendering your personal data becomes exponentially more valuable and exponentially more difficult at the same time. This is why Unstoppable Domains launched Humanity Check. Humanity Check proves that you're, well, you, without revealing any of your personal data. No matter where you go on the web, you'll have total control over which apps you want to share your data with and which ones you don't. Prefer to be completely clouded in mystique? No worries. Humanity Check is 100% opt-in. If you want to feel alive or at least prove you are, head to unstoppabledomains.com today and get your NFT domain with Humanity Check. Again, head on over to unstoppabledomains.com and get your NFT domain with Humanity Check today. This episode is brought to you by Valor. Valor represents what's next in the digital economy. They provide simplified, trusted access to crypto, decentralized finance, and Web3 investment opportunities. Institutions and investors can gain diversified, secure, compliant, and easily tradable access to a diversified set of industry-leading equity products and protocols through a single stock purchase on a regulated exchange. They're currently listed on the OTC at DEFTF and on the Canadian NEO Exchange at DEFI. For more information or to subscribe to receive company updates and financial information, you can visit their website at valor.com. That's VALOUR.com. Valor.com. Go check them out today.
Anthony Pompliano runs Pomp Investments. All views of him and the guests on his podcast are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Pomp Investments. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Pomp or his guests as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his personal opinion. This podcast is for informational purposes only.
All right, we got Will Clemente. Will, what's going on, brother?
Yo. How's it going, man? I'm back at the parents' house for 2 weeks. Woo! And I got a pimple, so it's like old times.
Back at the parents' house and you got a pimple. What a opening line. All right, let's jump right in. We've got about 20 minutes or so. The Fed, they announced they raised rates by 75 basis points. Bitcoin goes up. What's your read?
Yeah, I think, you know, just the general perception from like a high level is that, you know, as the Fed continues to raise rates, and as this week we've gotten, you know, a second negative GDP print, essentially the market is kind of approaching this as, well, you're getting to the point where the Fed is going to have to, you know, kind of take their foot off the gas pedal in terms of at least the pace and aggression of how they've been raising. And they said that in their meeting as well, that they're going to kind of slow the interval between when they've been raising. The Fed doesn't meet again until September. So I think that kind of sets up somewhat of a window just from that perspective for a little bear market rally.
All right. Now we see Bitcoin's price is reclaiming the 180-week kind of trend line here. What is this showing us?
Sure. Yeah. So like the first two charts are just basic, like super high time frame trend charts. So we're looking at one weekly and one monthly. The one you brought up is the 180 week EHMA. So this is called the exponential whole moving average. It's just a moving average that has more weighing to recent price action. And so whenever it's green, as you can see, the entire chart is green, that indicates that it's in an uptrend. So this is a good kind of meme line to show you that over the long term, Bitcoin kind of only trends up because the moving average only trends up. And also, as you'll notice by looking at the chart, historically, it's kind of indicated kind of these macro bottoming or accumulation areas. And this is something that we've talked about for several months. And as we approach this, we said, hey, this is probably a pretty good time to start averaging in. And then kind of the sign of confirmation would be reclaiming that line. So for Bitcoin, one thing that I've noticed over the last 2 years, and also looking at, you know, historical data as well, is that kind of these failed breakouts and breakdowns have been almost a better signal than actual breakouts and breakdowns in general. So like an example would be the double top of last year, right? We kind of deviated above the previous all-time high from May of last year in November of last year. Another example would be the summer of last year when we deviated below 30K before initiating kind of that second leg up into the back half of the year. So on a similar note, if we did reclaim this, that would essentially make all the price action below that what's called a deviation. So you have kind of this all this activity that goes on below that trend. Once it breaks back below, it basically invalidates the breakdown initially. And so you can see the same thing with the 200 week as well. One thing to keep in mind though, and very important to keep in mind, is that these candles haven't closed yet. So they'll close Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern time. You know, the reason I say it's important to close is if you look at the weekly, for example, you had kind of gotten this wick above the 200 week, but you know, we ended up closing below it at the last second. Price had dropped below before the weekly closed last week. So for now, it does look good, but you know, just for, you know, kind of these more high time frame kind of trend based market participants, maybe you want to wait to see that candle close on Sunday evening to get that confirmation that it has been reclaimed. But both of these look good so far.
The market cap of USDC and USDT, the stablecoin, dollar-based stablecoins, you've been talking about now for a couple of weeks, the relationship between those and price. What are you seeing here as we see this starting to kind of move a little bit?
Yeah, sure. I would throw, so that initial chart and the chart below it are both kind of in the same family. I would say the first one is a better indication. The second one's more of just something to look at confluence. So we'll focus on that first one. Like you said, this is looking at the market capitalization of USDT, which is Tether, and USDC, which is Circle coin, and comparing that to the aggregated total crypto market cap. And so what you see is that you essentially have this kind of channel in the top section of the chart on the screen. Whenever you get to the bottom end of the channel, and the reason that I have it red is because that's historically marked kind of these topping areas. And from first principles, this chart actually makes a lot of sense. So it's indicating to you that there's been a lot of dry powder deployed in the market relative to the size of crypto's market cap. So therefore, there's a lack of new marginal buyers. And so that kind of from first principles indicates to you that we're probably likely in an area of you know, topping out from very high time frame sense. You know, this chart is looking at like, you know, multi-month kind of swing trade type of timeframes. And then along the top end of the of that kind of ascending range or ascending channel, what you see is that whenever it hits the top end of that range, that indicates that there's a large amount of dry powder on the sidelines relative to the size of the aggregated crypto market cap. And so the way I kind of think of this is it's very like, you know, like dry Kindle and you know, when you have a spark, the more Kindle there is that's laid out, the more likely that you are to see that kind of fire spread. And so the more dry powder that there is on the sidelines, you know, as you see any type of rally, that increases the likelihood that just from a psychological standpoint, you're going to see a higher likelihood of market participants wanting to chase. And so you are starting to see, you know, I posted this about a month ago when it initially wicked up to the top of that range. But now since then, over the last, you know, couple of weeks, what you've started to see is that start to kind of roll over off the top of that trend line. And so to me, what that's indicating is you are starting to see some of that on a relative basis, dry powder being deployed into the market.
When we look at MVRV Z-score, this is one that I think you and I started talking about, I don't know, year and a half ago or so. What is this showing us now? It's down in the green zone, my friend.
For sure. Yeah. You know, we talked about this, as you said, for a long time. What we always said was, oh, if this ever got back into this green range, it would be a tremendous time to average in. And, you know, we got back into that green zone over the last month or two. And at that time period, we came on the show and we said, hey, look, this is a good time to average in. It does appear now that the, you know, indicator has successfully, you know, shown another time to average in as well. You know, that doesn't mean that, you know, these lows can't get retested. But, you know, as we kind of head out of this accumulation range, it does appear that we're kind of moving away from that area where was, you know, an incredible kind of, you know, multi-year opportunity to buy. I think there is a you know, pretty strong likelihood that we were to retest that. But just to say that, you know, this, the market has respected the green zone again. And if we get back into the green zone, I would definitely be averaging in as I have over the last, you know, month or two, you know, within it.
You got the 200-day trend here as Bitcoin continues. We got another green signal. What's this showing?
Yeah, we love the green stuff. Green's a cool color. yeah, so like a month ago, I had posted this this tweet below. It says, you know, Bitcoin has only ever been this far below its 200-day moving average a handful of times, less than 2% of its existence, each of which looked terrifying to buy at the moment, but terrifyingly obvious in hindsight. And so now when we kind of fast forward a month from there, as you can see, we've now exited that green range and we're no longer that far below this deviation from the trend that historically has marked bottoms. And so, again, not to say that it's impossible for that to be retested. I think there's, you know, a stronger than 50% likelihood that probably is retested by the end of the year. But, you know, that's not to say, again, that I think this you know, this is served well again, and we used it in real time to indicate a good time to average in. And if we were to head back down below this, you know, to this low of a deviation, to this far of a deviation from that 200-day trend, I would looking to be getting some more spot buys in as well.
When we go and we look at the derivatives, 3-month basis has recovered slightly, and there's even this backwardation. Explain this.
Yeah, so when we've been talking about derivatives, you know, we kind of made this like mental checklist for things that we want to see. One of which has been seeing the 3-month futures basis go into backwardation. And so, you know, this has been something that's fueled bull markets. So if we look at, you know, like 2020 to 2021, we saw this rip up to like 45%. What this meant is that you could long spot short futures and then capture the difference. And so that, you know, this really rips high in times of like high speculation, everyone wants to get long BTC, and it creates an ARB opportunity for market participants that are like delta neutral, meaning like they're, you know, they have no directional bias essentially. Like that and arbitraging funding are like the two main ones that took place. Oh, and also obviously the grayscale one, but that was more towards the back half of 2020. But yeah, like those two or three were kind of the main drivers, I would say, of that kind of fueled the bull market. And as we can see right now, we're, you know, back from, we reached as low as like 0.27% and even backwardation towards the bottom on a couple venues, but now we're back up to about 2.57%. So right now you can long spot short futures and capture the difference. Another thing I wanted to kind of highlight is that you're seeing kind of this lack of like extreme speculation in the market on this rally, because this has remained relatively muted. As you can see, you know, whenever we reach a period of high speculation, like early 2021, you know, we can reach those high, you know, states of 40-45%. And you see the same thing in funding, same kind of general premise as well.
Yeah, we've got the short-term holder cost basis here. We're underneath it. What is this telling us?
Right. So short-term holder cost basis, explained it, I feel like, several times on the show, but it, just from a high level, it's the aggregated cost basis of market participants that have been in the Bitcoin market for less than 155 days. So we look at the market capitalization based off when those coins were last moved for that cohort of market participants. And currently that's down to 28,000 from like 53,000 at the peak in December of last year. This is something that we used when we broke below to say, hey, look, it's time to be cautious, right? Because we kind of lost what has been historically a kind of momentum or trend-based kind of indicator. And so what I'm looking at here is from like a super kind of macro perspective, this is a good indication of bear or bull trends. And so if we were to reclaim this, I think that's kind of confirmation of, you know, a trend change. So look, I think in this market, we have value-based market participants and momentum-based market participants. You know, a lot of the indicators that we've talked about have been kind of deep value indicators. And so, those are for those value-based market participants like myself, like yourself, Pomp, who have kind of this long-term, you know, time horizon, and they're able to hold their buys for several years. But there are also market participants that just look to follow Bitcoin's, extreme in many cases trends. And so this is a good kind of proxy for that. And as you can see in the beginning of 2019, kind of spring of 2019, once that was reclaimed, that kind of was a good signal for riding the rest of that move up to about 14K throughout the middle of 2019. You didn't really miss the Pico bottom. You missed it maybe by $500 or $1,000, but you basically are paying the price for getting that confirmation of the trend. So I would say for those momentum-based market participants, this is something to keep in mind. It currently sits again at 28,000, which is also, when we look at the chart below, some nice confluence with kind of daily, price structure. There's pretty much, I don't want to use this, kind of meme word of price or, price gap or air between, but, we really had a lot of inefficient selling between like 28 down to 18K. A lot of that, in my opinion, was forced selling. A lot of that was probably 3AC, other participants that were kind of related to a lot of the contagion that took place. So you saw a lot of what's called uninformed flow. So basically people that have to sell, they're not necessarily, that could be liquidations or people that are, selling because they have to post collateral for, whether they're, borrowing from any of these like centralized lenders, and they were, all these centralized lenders are checking all these market participants after 3AC to see if they actually have the collateral they do, because there's a lot of hysteria around who's solvent. A lot of that stuff took place. So you had a lot of kind of inefficient selling down. And so due to that, price structure really doesn't have any real resistance up until about that 28K level, which is confluence with on-chain as well. So, whenever you see confluence between on-chain and technicals, that kind of strengthens the importance of that level in my mind. So, I'd be looking for, I think the base case would be, this would be a dead cat bounce to kind of that area, unless it were flipped. And then you could say, okay, perhaps this is actually a high time frame trend change. So, those are two important levels that, I think are important to keep in mind from a kind of trend perspective.
Talk to us about funding rate. I know that you've said that you want to see more of a negative funding kind of rate regime. What's going on here?
Right. So funding is based on the delta between the perpetual futures and the kind of the weighted average spot price across the different spot venues, and something called the spot index price. And so what we want to see ideally is a regime of negative funding, and then B, price grinding up on a regime of increasingly negative funding. So if we look at, after March of 2020 was an extreme example where you basically had a disbelief rally off of those lows. Another good example is September of 2020. And another really good recent example was July of 2021. And Pomp, I remember when we came on and we said, the day before that big short squeeze, we said, hey, look, I think, we said there's a high likelihood of a short squeeze. The reason we said that was because funding was increasingly negative as price was grinding up. So, that in an ideal world is something that you'd say, hey, look, this is going to give me high conviction that we're going to see a continued reversal. Right now, obviously, we have seen some pockets of negative funding over the last month or so. But at the moment, we're seeing slightly muted positive funding. Again, it's nothing of major concern, but I'm just bringing this up as a point to say, if it were to go increasingly negative as we grind it up, that would be an indication to say, okay, I can have stronger conviction in this kind of being somewhat of a disbelief rally. So more of just put that in as something to look out for than necessarily something that's like giving a particular signal at the moment.
And the last thing is the leverage ratio. I know that you've been putting these out on Twitter, but explain these.
Sure. Yeah. I just kind of threw this in here just because I've seen this chart kind of circulating on Twitter as something that people are using. Similar to open interest, like the idea is similar, gives you an idea of the amount of like pressure or contracts that are built up. And on top of that, this would tell you how much leverage is being taken on those contracts. The kind of calculation for this is you're looking at the aggregated amount of futures open interest, and then you're comparing that to the amount of coins that are on centralized exchanges. And, you know, from first principles, that kind of makes sense, right? Because you're getting a proxy for how much collateral is essentially on these exchanges relative to how many contracts are open. So that should be a good kind of proxy for the amount of leverage that people are using. The problem that I personally have with this metric is when we go to the next chart, what's happened over the last year or so, year and a half, I would say, is you've kind of got this regime change in the futures market where you've gone from 70% of all the futures contracts being collateralized with Bitcoin and other crypto assets, mostly Bitcoin. And that's come all the way down to about 40% of the aggregated futures open interest being collateralized with crypto, again, mostly Bitcoin. So, you know, I would say that kind of macro kind of regime change of kind of the futures market structure, that's changed, in my opinion, the usefulness of this metric. So I kind of just threw it in there just to say this is something that I've seen people talking about on Twitter, but it's something that I don't find particularly useful anymore because of kind of that that underlying like fundamental change in the futures structure.
How do you feel right now in terms of sentiment wise? Like if you just kind of had to zoom out from all the charts, everything, you see Twitter, you see kind of the legacy financial institutions, you see the Federal Reserve and kind of all the macro stuff. Like what's your general sense as to where we are at the moment?
You know, I think, I spend most of my time on like crypto Twitter, right? And with all these like anonymous, like, you know, random animal characters as their profile pictures that are traders and stuff. And I would say like across all these people, the kind of consensus is that it seems like somewhat of disbelief, I would say. And you can see that as well in like engagement from different, Twitter accounts, some that have, you know, leaned majority bearish, rightfully so perhaps over the last like month or two, and not necessarily saying anything against their views. Cause again, those that have been erring on the side of caution over the last like month or two or three, you know, they've been prudent and have likely done well. But I would just say like looking at some of those, you know, those accounts and their engagement, seeing, you know, some of these posts get, you know, 5 to 10,000 likes for just saying something like, hey, I'm not buying into this rally. That to me is a bit of an indication just from like a pure sentiment perspective that perhaps we're getting a bit of disbelief, especially when you compared that to some accounts that in the moment, are leaning bullish. So I would say that has been one thing that I've noticed just like being on Twitter all day. But you know, that doesn't mean too much because that's, I guess, just the crypto centric crowd and, you know, the people that are really allocating capital maybe aren't on Twitter, but that's just something that I've noticed from like, kind of retail trading on Twitter perspective is that it seems like the engagement is definitely on the side of those who are kind of leading cautious. So.
I love it. What, where can we send people to follow you on Twitter?
Sure. Yeah. My Twitter account's W Clemente III.
W Clemente III. How many followers you got now? Are you over 700,000?
I don't know about that, man. It's definitely slowed down. That's another thing I'll say is that, I'm sure you've noticed this as well, is that engagement, I would say, is kind of like dropped off a cliff just in general from like follower count, all that stuff, like the rate of change over the last like few months. You know, I'll check it like once a month or so and just kind of use it more of like, not just to say like, in like a narcissistic way of like how many followers did I get this month, but like more so I think it is somewhat of a good data point to say, okay, hey, look, you know, in, you know, September or November of 2021, you know, I added like whatever 100,000 followers or something, and you know, this last month I added like, you know, 9 or 10,000. So it's showing you, you know, there's definitely a decrease in the rate of change of new market participants coming into the crypto space.
I think that that's actually a very fair analysis. Like it's a great data point that shows just how much interest is there from outside of the community, right? The following is who's already in the community, and then how many people are coming from outside makes a lot of sense. Yeah. All right, my friend, we will continue to do these. I appreciate you, you jumping on, and, we'll speak soon.
All right. Thanks a lot, Pomp.
All right. Later, buddy.
See you, man.
Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. I really hope you enjoyed this one. Make sure you're subscribed on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcast player. And if you're looking to transition into a brand new job in the Bitcoin or crypto industry, we've got you covered. Head over to thecryptoacademy.io, My team and I have been working with the top HR teams in the industry to develop an intensive 3-week training program with over 50 live events. We teach you exactly what you need to know to break into the industry, including live interview prep and resume review. Our students have been hired at over 75 of the world's best Bitcoin and crypto companies. Go to thecryptoacademy.io to learn more. Again, that's thecryptoacademy.io. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you share it with your friends, and I'll see you all for the next episode.